You are listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, Winnipeg.
Hey folks, it's Friday afternoon, which means it's time for another edition of Let's Play DJ. This is the show where every week I have a different guest on to talk about music they like and listen to it. Today my guest is a local legend, an incredibly prolific singer-songwriter, producer, multi-instrumentalist. It's Scott Nolan. Hey Scott.
Hey Jacob.
Let's Play DJ. Thanks so much for being on the show today. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Anytime, anytime. You have a show coming up at the park.
I do, with this little group I'm a part of called the Ramblers Choir.
Ramblers Choir. Tell me about that.
We're kind of three songwriting friends. We came together as a one-off. I did a trip with Joe Nolan.
Okay.
And we had this great trip, and we kind of agreed, hey, let's not plan anything, no set lists, like nothing. Completely off the cuff on stage, and we never knew what the other might do. And we were both qualified to work that way. And then we had a one-off in Edmonton where this fellow, Scott Cook, was coming home, and it was a homecoming for him. It was kind of a homecoming for Joe Nolan. So we thought, okay, you know, why don't we put it all together instead of play opposite of each other? And anyway, we got a venue that was bigger than any of the one of us, and we really, really worked, and we filled this incredible hall. It was nuts. These kind of corporate promoters were just beside themselves, and we did the show the same way Joe and I did, with no prep, no rehearsal, set list, and it was a thing of sheer beauty. And I was present at one of the very first Blackie and the Rodeo King gigs, and also this great American group called Willie Sugar Caps, and both these groups are kind of, it's a weird word, but they might be considered supergroups. They're made up of people who do different things. And anyway, this group with Scott and Joe and Pamela, I felt it. The very first song, I went, oh, my God. The voices, the way the voices went, the ability to learn a song and be so present with it that there's no mistakes. It's a, it's a special and rare thing. And anyway, so I think it was my idea to go, yeah, I think we better pursue this, you know. If we could do one show like this with absolutely no prep or rehearsal, you know, maybe at least a tour is in order. And so here we go.
Nice. Oh, that's exciting. And you guys are playing at the park when? Soon, I think.
November 20th.
November 20th, right on.
Yeah. And that kicks off the little run we're doing. It officially is our second show. I don't know what the consensus is on preparing for it. You know, the desire is there to like, okay, why don't we, you know, so I don't know. I'm not like in any, I'm not controlling the matter, you know, but I'm excited. It's I've done this a lot. In fact, for years, I got a lot of work as a musician because I was a song sympathizer. And so I could work with these wonderful songwriters. I did a great house concert with Lynn Miles once. After the first song, it was so such a great moment. She turned to me and she's like, did you listen to any of my stuff? And I stood there in front of the crowd, right? Like, I couldn't lie my way through the moment.
Yeah.
She's like, you didn't listen to any of my stuff, did you? And like, the truth was, is I was so present and had such reverence for her as a artist, human being. I knew myself. Yeah. I know how I work, and which is not to say I never prepare, but there's something really special about that, I think, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I like the idea, a song sympathizer. Like you're serving the song. You sort of...
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I like that. Lynn, I always mix up the Lynns, but does Lynn Miles have that song, High Heels in the Snow?
That's the one, yeah.
Oh, man, yeah, that song.
Unbelievable. Oh. You never see it coming. And she's also in the rarefied group of... I know a lot of... Some of the best songwriters I know are very basic kind of musicians, whereas Lynn, one of these artists that her skill set on both sides of the thing is steep.
Yeah, I did a Banff residency many years ago now, but she was one of the mentors there, and I remember her being incredibly honest with her feedback, which was awesome, but also like terrifying.
We also had like the industry was, as you can imagine, was very hard for her.
Yeah.
And she was not a take abuse kind of person. Yeah. Just wasn't her personality. When she kind of started, another guy I worked with earlier that was very significant to me was Fred Eaglesmith. He mm-hmm. gave me a lot of early opportunities. And there was a time very early on where Fred and Lynn were not only a couple, but almost one another's muses a little bit. So they not only performed together, but they wrote these unbelievable songs inspired by each other. And it was a big moment in Canadian songwriting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if like, I don't know how many people really are kind of aware of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I always expect Fred to be more widely celebrated, but truthfully, I think he's blacklisted. Hmm. I think there's people out there that like, they like keeping him underground because he's a threat to how things operate, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the Canadian music industry is, I mean, all music industries are small, but the Canadian one is specifically small.
Big time, you know? I mean, the idea is to get along, I think. But mm-hmm. but anyway, these people both influenced me, and they both have that in common. Like, they're tough. Holy mm-hmm. smokes. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we got this list of songs, and I want to get through them because a lot of these songs are some of my favorites. This first one, I don't know, Montgomery Street by Jesse DeNatale? DeNatale?
DeNatale, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about this song.
He's become a very good friend to me. Very special person in my life. And I first saw him at Winnipeg Folk Fest. Hmm. It was one of those combinations where, wow, I'm glad they booked this guy, but I can't believe they booked this guy. Like, it's put him on a weird stage at a bad time, behind another stage that was like drowning him out. Hmm. And, in his bio, there was this great quote from Tom Waits about how all the really great writers have been sent back underground. If there's a leak in the boiler room, it's the music of Jesse DeNatale. And that was enough, obviously, for me. And I got there, and there was another kind of modest, but like, we all showed up feeling the same thing, right? We sat close to the stage and took this in, and it was a masterclass. He's unbelievable. And as our friendship grew, the really striking thing for me is he's got that rare air of just true humility, wherever it comes from. Mm-hmm. There's a kindness and a grace and a beauty in Jesse that is almost completely unprecedented for me.
Yeah.
And as I got to know him too, like, some of my very big heroes are his biggest fans, Ramla, Jack Elliott, Jonathan Richmond, Tom Waits. They all adore Jesse, and it's because he's got that thing. And so recently I was running, listening to his new record, and I got home and I thought, how is he not at least as well known as this friend? Mm-hmm. And then I thought, you know, it's like Van Morrison when he was 20. But Van doesn't do what he did when he was 20 anymore. Yeah. And it really got me to thinking, maybe that's the vibrancy and potency in Jesse's music and why it hits me the way it does. Because it hasn't been spoiled by failure or success. It's kind of, it had this weird balance the whole while. And the fact is he writes pound for pound as good or better songs than even his heroes do currently.
Yeah.
So, big lesson for me.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, well, I'm really, really excited to hear it. Here's Montgomery Street.
Fire engine singing in the backyard light. Oh, the backyard light. Oh, the lullaby water trickles from an empty lot. And it's all we got. Yeah, it's all we got. And the iron and the stone and your sad trombone and your leather shoes and the ivory comb. All our bags are packed like a burglar. It's just me and her who will lead you down the road. So long, Malvina, and you scoured a hill, and I'm sad to say lonely sounds and ice cream windows and the sound of jazz and the sound of cool makes you wanna move, but no one's moving if you wanna pass down in Chinatown. Simple words aren't hard to find. Once a complication's born, we'll watch the next day turn. Now the frozen angels on the concrete steps, the sailors sleep, oh, the widows wept, and drums are banging while the fireworks fall. Yeah, the fireworks fall. And some folks wander through the winter's night, oh, the winter's night, oh, the winter's roll. I found your coat while it's tumbling out of the fireman's ball. Yeah, the fireman's ball. The complications burn. We'll watch the next day turn. Now the leaves are shaking on the ginkgo tree. Yeah, the ginkgo tree for you and me. And a gray light splashes on the city sky beyond. Seasons change and they don't feel strange. No, they don't feel strange, but I guess that you and I were moving on. And it's the same old story, it's our only book. Gonna turn the page, gonna take a look. Gonna rip it out, gonna roll it up. Gonna feed those flames inside. And the water's drinking on an empty lot. That's all we got. Complications burn. We'll watch the next day turn. We'll watch the next day turn. We'll watch the next day turn.
Was Montgomery Street by Jesse DiNatale. You're listening to Let's Play DJ here on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. My name is Jake Bordofsky, and I'm here with Scott Nolan. Scott, what a song. Oh, man. This
Wow. A lot of San Francisco imagery there.
Yeah.
If you're with the city, there's a lot of beautiful references.
No, that was just gorgeous. I was getting, like, do you know a guy named, the name's escaping me. Sam Baker.
Oh, sure, very
Texas.
Well.
Yeah, sort of reminded me of that a little bit.
Sam's another guy where Joanna Miller and I, my longtime musical partner, Joanna and I did one of these shows with Sam, just like I described.
No way.
No chord charts.
Yeah.
And with Sam, the occasion was at the Old Quarter, okay. which is a legendary room started by Rex Bell, who was Townes Van Zandt's best friend and bass player. Mm-hmm. And so there we were, this hollowed stage, right? And like I was like, Sam, you know, we played with Mary Goche and Hayes Carl. And mm-hmm. so we had a reputation musically, but still to go in. And I mean, God, Joel and I developed that between us where like this range from like, we tried everything, boyfriend, girlfriend, siblings, like, you know, our relationship kept growing to the unprecedented kind of proportions in a sense. And so we had this almost musical telepathy mm-hmm. that we could apply outside of our regular gig, you know? And yeah, so Sam's new record is incredible. And all these songs, I'm thinking of High Heels and the Snow could have been on this list. And mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard Sam's new record, but it's a spoken word record produced by Rodney Crowell.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, I haven't. I really only know Say Grace. I think that's his.
His new stuff is wild. Another interesting segue from Jesse in that, like, Sam's another example in that these artists kind of help me feel at peace because they're constantly striving for something. And again, like it, maybe it's a balance of, you know, the amount of time it takes to get to a certain, I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a relationship in the trajectory and how these things develop, because mm-hmm. I know as a young person in the music business starting out, all the things that were of the norm in terms of music industry were really against the grain for me. Mm-hmm. Like I had an early song get popular and I got shy about it. I didn't want to do that song. And, you know, they'd always say, do your known material. I struggled with those things. The idea of doing a particular set every night because you're fulfilling a demand. I felt self-conscious and shy about all those things. And then over time I realized I wasn't artistically stimulated by them. I think was really, I just was too young to know that. Mm-hmm. I wanted to somehow afford myself the ability to do whatever I chose, mm-hmm. that no matter what the cost. And like Sam and Jesse, both their new records are unbelievable. So they're little lighthouses out there for me to go, okay, you know, this is,
Let me ask a little bit more about that. That's interesting. So you're sort of saying like, it makes you feel like at peace. At peace from what?
At peace with the process and journey, you know, mm-hmm. like learning to be patient with all of it. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was in my 20s writing songs, any lulls from writing would feel agonizing at times where, mm-hmm. I mean, I'll be 50 in December now and like, I don't dwell on any of it. Mm-hmm. And it'll slip out other areas as I've gotten older, areas that I didn't expect to go. Mm-hmm. And I realize, oh, the discipline of it is where it stabilizes my world.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of my healthiest practices. Mm-hmm. And so luckily I've had enough time to get a little bit older at it. And I realize, oh, I can apply this to other areas of my life. And I've mm-hmm. begun doing that. But music in particular saved me as a young guy, and it continued to save me. Mm-hmm. And somewhere I thankfully matured enough to where I went, oh, this doesn't owe me anything. I better observe and revere it, not the other way around.
Hmm. Yeah.
So when I look at a Sam or a Jesse, what I mean by the piece is like their status, they're yeah. still developing in a lot of ways as much as I am. Yeah. I mean, maybe better known a little bit, but like it's a whole separate job, has nothing to do with what we do.
Yeah.
Right. Trying to make it viably commercially successful.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. And I think that's interesting. Like I know for me too, like there is a big difference playing to a captive audience, playing songs that you care about or new songs or songs that are exciting to you and having them heard. That's what I'm hearing from you. I know for me too. It's like that's the magic of playing a show.
Yep.
Right.
Like and you can have that. I think like you can achieve that like anything, I think, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. in my 30s, I did a Wednesday night gig at a place called the Bella Vista.
Yeah, yeah.
And early on, the first wave where we packed the place really full, mm-hmm. I had, like, including myself, there were 3 guitar players. Both my other guitar players were, like, big hitters, right? Like, really amazing Winnipeg guitar players and sax player and all this stuff. And, like, it got really popular, really jammed. Like, you couldn't fit any more people in there. And something about it didn't sit with ease at me. So I broke it all down and started again. I lost all the guitar people. I lost all the people that wanted to be
Yeah. Startled,
you know, and I started again. Hmm. And I did that over and over for 10 years, trying to figure out what the heck I was even doing, you know? Hmm. And that was before I, you know, started telling stories and doing any of that stuff. It was still just the process of learning to write songs in front of band. And I look back and go, man, that's a pretty healthy way to do it. I mean, mm-hmm. it was satisfying when I look back and the instinct that something about the popularity is not the right word, but something about the crazy, I don't know. I didn't feel like I was in control of it yet.
Yeah.
I felt like I was throwing all these things out there and I thought, I don't want any tricks here, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
And anyway,
no, that's, I mean, and what a privilege too, though, to have a space to explore that. Right. And an audience.
Especially to explore that for me, it was the Blue Note Cafe as a kid,
yeah.
The Bella Vista as I was kind of honing my craft. And then when I could charge anything for people to see me, I'd go over to Times and it's like the trifecta for me. And I think there's still venues for young people, more in Winnipeg probably than anywhere.
Yep.
But, it's a big part because I, like, even the showcase stuff, I didn't do tons of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Felt weird and unnatural. I was, like, really just trying to, always preoccupied with just trying to get good.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Didn't feel like I was ready to showcase anything in a way, you know?
Do you still feel that way, or do you feel like you've reached it now in terms of, like,
no, I do still feel that way. Yeah. I toy all the time with, like, do I go back out and start some of these things anew, or do I just accept that I never really fit very well there in the first place and just keep going where I'm going? You know,
mm-hmm.
I found it tough. I found it could be a insensitive world.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really jive well with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the same time, when I was starting, there were some, like, amazing people. Kevin Walters, who's long since passed away now, was at Manitoba Film and Music, and Carol Vivier. So there were, like, these really great artistic champions.
Mm-hmm.
So I never, that was a good, healthy part of it for me, mm-hmm. having that.
And I think that's perhaps just a Winnipeg thing also.
Yeah.
I've lived in other cities.
I'm sure it very much exists today. I'm just pretty out of touch with it all, you know.
Okay. But we could talk forever, but we should listen to at least a couple more songs.
Okay. What was it?
Let's see, we got left. We got a Watermelon Slim song. We got a Little Prince song. We got a Corn Raymond song.
Oh yeah, okay.
Take your pick.
Let's go with Winners of Us All.
All right, here it is.
And I thought I was singing for a whole bunch of people, billions of folks living far below the line. They don't buy new pickups, they can't afford CDs, they don't matter to folks who smell like Calvin Klein. Wearing torn tank tops and greasy coveralls, they're pushing crushed tin cans down a black conveyor belt. They're living with wives and kids on far too little money, doing the best they can with the deuces they've been dealt. And this old working sweat keeps on building up, and a few of us profit, but most of us lose. And day after day, we stretch out a living. And our unheard melody sounds something like the blues. Something like the blues. There's a woman I've loved when I wasn't too frustrated with busting my ass just trying to survive. And a 9-year-old beauty that I'd give my life for. And I'll spend all my strength just to help them stay alive. And I'm sitting in this dirty old dumpster rig riding, knowing the chance you'll ever hear me is small. But I'm doing it for everybody that don't draw that bottom line. And I'm hoping one day to make winners of us all. Winners of us all. This old driver's song. You think I ain't worth it? You're 1,000 miles wrong. But I'm still fierce and free, and I'll fight toe to toe for a piece of your comfort, though it's coming real slow. And I hope you'll come down here and hear me real soon. For I'm singing this working man's tune. Where I'm singing this working man's tune. Where I'm singing this working man's tune.
Just tied up with a nice little bow at the end there. That was Winners of Us All by Watermelon Slim. You listen to Let's Play DJ on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. I'm here with Scott Nolan. What a treat that song was.
That's my Mount Olympus, that song. of all the things I've got to produce in my career, that song was mystifying to me.
Okay.
In the session you just heard, I play drums, Gilles Fournier plays string bass, and Jeremy Russo, if you know Jeremy, a blind prodigy musician with
I was in high school around the same time as him. He was a bit older than me, but I remember watching him in like the high school band and stuff and being amazed
by it. Yeah. And so that was my team, and now Slim is this living legend of the blues from Clarksdale, Mississippi. And this song, he was a member of Mensa. Like he's a his life story is it's just unbelievable. His family lineage, the whole thing, is this incredible story. But so he wrote that song, words and music, in his head while driving industrial waste, driving a truck. He can't play it on piano, but he wrote it in long, like in notation. I mean, the man's quantifiably a genius.
Okay.
He waited for years to find the right producer to help him bring the song to life. And so that was my team. I had to call in these true extraordinary musicians. And it was 4 hours before any of us stood up or stretched. Slim stood in the room with a microphone in his hand and led us through the song with his voice. Then we got it in a take. Jeremy Russo went back and did one take with clarinet, and that was the session. And I went on. It took me almost 2 years to go back and learn it on piano because I wanted to learn to play it, the song myself. Mm-hmm. And just that practice was it. It's hard to describe. It became like this prayer or meditation. I've been able to work with some unbelievable artists in my life and career with these incredible songs, and that song is my Mount Olympus. I've learned more from that single song.
Yeah, I believe
that. If you listen to the lyrics, the way the chords subtly shift to kind of, it's like that Leonard Cohen. It goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fell, and the major lift.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like that in that it's masterful the way the tone changes. And anyway, big moment for me, Winners of a Song.
Oh, it's just a gorgeous song. I'm curious, like, you know, you obviously worked as a songwriter and a singer and performer for a long time. Like, how does that translate to producing, and do you have a preference, and how does that work?
I've been traveling a lot and developed what my doctor called it. I developed what they called a generalized anxiety disorder, and it kind of brought me to my knees. Mm-hmm. I spent years on medication for it and living an unhealthy lifestyle in so many regards, and I never planned to produce at all. Hmm. I was lucky in that the guy that I produced my first record with, Lance McMaster, over at Mid-Ocean, it's a recording school. Yeah. He built my studio, which is kind of it's a custom garage, basically, a studio inside of it. And I never had any intention at all to produce other people's records. In fact, going in, I didn't even know that I'd produce my own there. It was going to be a workshop. Mm-hmm. And I kind of kept developing it. So the production stuff was another one of these weird gifts in that it was the right thing at the right time. Mm-hmm. I've been doing a bit of film stuff. I haven't produced a record for anybody in a while. I don't know. I did about 15 records or something in a 3-year window. I don't remember how or why any of it. It all came to me. I didn't solicit any of the work, really. Mm-hmm. And an unbelievable list of people too. Every one of those records I would stand behind like it was my own. I consider it kind of a part of my own mm-hmm. broader artistic legacy, and they were all really meaningful, and there was, and I had a great team with this colleague of mine, Jamie Sitar, who was kind of a mastering engineer by trade, and mm-hmm. I brought him in to kind of helm my sessions. I went against the grain of what I saw happening out there, you know. Mm-hmm. Awesome. He was down. And the industry was changing. And I really, my early heroes like Burt Burns and Doc Pomus and people like this, they did things a certain way. And it wasn't hocus pocus. They were craftspeople. And mm-hmm. I loved how they could roll up their sleeves and do it at any time. And so I'd always wanted to do that for myself, where an engineer had his seat and a producer had his seat. I didn't want to stare at screens. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be free to move around. And it afforded some, like that Watermelon Slim thing, it afforded some incredible opportunities. I mean, he left Clarksdale, Mississippi and came here in the dead of winter, I think. Was it the dead of winter? I don't remember. But the whole thing was absurd, really. Why would he do that, you know? And I brought in, I think it was 19 Manitoba artists to help me contribute on this record.
Nice.
Including a powwow singer friend of mine. And like, it was really... I really felt like we were making great art, you know. Mm-hmm.
Does producing other people's music inform your own writing?
I don't know. I think it all, it's you are what you eat. So it all fuels me in a healthy way.
Yeah, totally.
And making sure that being a primary objective as the producer is to make sure that environment is, that's kind of the first job, that it's comfortable and mm-hmm. safe and relaxed and mm-hmm. dependable and all those things. And I haven't done it in a while. I'm not like chomping at the bit to do it. I find that I'm not writing songs actively every day. I might be fooling around with collage art or poetry. And like, mm-hmm. I walk a lot in my neighborhood and where I live. There's been some very famous painters lived right around me over the years, mm-hmm. Lemoyne Fitzgerald and Clarence Tillanius, mm-hmm. Leo Moles got a lot of his work in my neighborhood. And like, I identify at this point in my life more with those people. Hmm. I like the idea that like, these neighborhoods are in my songs too. And this city, when I stopped traveling, I started writing a lot more about here. And in my heart, that's how I'm trying to contribute. I like the modesty of those guys' legacies that they worked. I walk by Fitzgerald's house every day, mm-hmm. and it's like a temple to me in a way. Like, it's just, I think there's something about the humility of the workaday ethic and practice. And mm-hmm. Years ago, I asked myself, you know, I was sitting alone and I said, really, if you could choose right now, what do you really want? You get one opportunity to pick it. And my choice was to get up every day and get to create art and do whatever the heck I want, really. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really long for any kind of stardom or any of that stuff. I've gotten around it a little bit over my time, and it's a lot of pressure. People don't realize how hard it is to operate up there. Mm-hmm. Even if you're lucky enough to get there, mm-hmm. it's very hard.
Yeah.
And when you live and think by the concept of you are what you eat changes up there. Mm-hmm. You're really, really mindful and on top of it all, I think, to do it, to really do it right, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. not kill yourself trying.
Totally. And like, keep your community around you.
Yeah. And keep putting into it. And like, you know, I used to say a lot when I worked with younger writers, hip-hop was born in my lifetime. So you almost have to look to their community just based on that alone. And here's a neat thing. You see an MC, you know, wind up in the front. What's the first thing he does? He reaches back and pulls five more MCs up. Yeah. Or the mixtape, the concept of the mixtape. What happened there? They all got robbed just like everybody else in the music industry. So they found a way to flip it. Mm-hmm. And they were constantly fighting these negative forces. Mm-hmm. And it created great art, you know?
Yeah.
It created better art for it. So there it is. There's the mystery solved. You're going to pick an ethic and a code for yourself. What's it going to be? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. No, that's a lovely way of putting it. And I think, you know, it's funny. I talk about this a lot with friends of mine, some of whom are, you know, experiencing arguably, you know, commercial success. But about how important it is to continue to elevate others and like keep your community around you and like stay true to what we have like here in town and how like supportive and
it's always been amazing here too, you mm-hmm. know,
and it's different in other cities. Like I lived in Toronto for 5 years. It's not like that there.
I had Dan Mangan, a great songwriter buddy of mine, recently. There's something really crazy going on in Winnipeg right now. I'm like, you know, the crazy thing, Dan, it's always been that way. Always been that way, all the way back to the Guess Who and BT. Like, it's a very unpretentious art town.
Yeah.
William Prince and I yesterday went and watched Guy Madden's new film.
Oh, yeah.
At noon in a big empty theater. Like, it was an amazing kind of Winnipeg moment, yeah. you know? And like, all mediums of art are mm-hmm. so profoundly and powerfully represented here. It's unparalleled. I've never been anywhere like it. That's what kind of keeps me here is I like the richness of the soil and the history. And I've knocked on all these doors over the years of people I've been interested in, Guy Madden, John Sampson, Catherine Hunter. Mm-hmm. Every one of them answered me.
Yeah.
Totally. And over time, these friendships grew. And I'm like, oh, geez, I really admire these people. And it's always kept me tethered.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember who it was. I asked them what they thought of, you know, what it is about Winnipeg. And something they said is, well, it's too small of a town to be an asshole. And so you just have to be nice.
Like there were early days where I'm not going to besmirch anybody, but there have been assholes here over the years.
Sure.
And they don't assholes last. That we love. Yeah. Assholes that we love. And they did get away with it for a while. You know, they got away with drunk driving and they got a, yeah, you know, yeah. Actually kind of nuts, but one thing that I found, I wrote a song about Winnipeg once called If I Could Only Leave Here. And there was a lyric, this boat is too big for the waters you're in. Even the wealthy get cold in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. Even musicians own homes in Winnipeg. There's something that happens here that's inescapable, mm-hmm. Whether by privilege or wealth or circumstance. Like, you are going to freeze. You're going to suffer these blizzards. You're gonna be overwhelmed by homelessness and like it's all right here. It started here, mm-hmm. and that's what I think keeps it unpretentious. Even when somebody gets way up here, the rest of Winnipeg still just goes, all right, let's see.
Yeah, totally.
I've had so many great artist friends. I remember Remy Shand, his career kind of when it really exploded, we'd worked together for years. And, you know, he was one in this long line tapestry of unbelievable talents that were born in this, you know, mm-hmm. where these rivers meet. That's, you know. There's something, there's a powerful convergence of currents that just, you know, and now really with, I think what's happening politically, even in the province, like it's an exciting time for Manitoba.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's also becoming, I mean, this is sort of a bit of a doomsday thing, but like it has become and is becoming one of the more habitable places on the planet to live.
Yeah.
You know?
Tough circumstances are a blessing, not a curse. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's easy to put out. I mean, it's forced change. It creates resilience and
humility, like you said, which I think is important. You mentioned William Prince. Let's listen to a William Prince song.
All right,
here's the carny.
One half of my two oldest friends took a job till the summer's end. A wonder show and a pop-up tent, kicking dust in every small town. And out of work, in the end, a few hundred a week ain't that bad, my friend. Don't think he ever picked up a wrench in his whole damn life. Buzzing lights and the mosquitoes bit. Thought for sure that he quit. Just as soon as the nighttime hit, well, he proved me wrong. Cause by the end of it, the tilt-a-whirl and the zipper zip, and he had both hands in it from sunup until they tore down. Most these folks ain't like most these folks. Keep in mind that some folks lie. And if you ever need a place to go, just look for the neon signs. Popcorn, soda, and caramel apples. 3 weeks in, all we couldn't stand. Sleeping on a paper-thin mattress, praying for the rain. Fist fight almost went in the fire. Garbage tattoo of barbed wire covers the arms of this kid named Kyle, who swears Joe stole his wheel. Fairground littered with happy families, painted faces and cotton candy. The kind of life that would be just dandy. Then who run the ride? Guess that's just carny life. Cause most of these folks ain't like most of these folks. Keep in mind that some folks lie. And if you ever need a place to go, just look for the neon sign. Most of these folks ain't like most of these folks. Keep in mind that some folks lie. And if you ever need a place to go, just look for the neon signs. Look for the neon signs.
God, every time to hear a William Prince song, it's like I'm hearing it for the first time. That was The Carney by Will Prince. You're listening to Let's Play DJ on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. I am privileged to be joined by Scott Nolan, and we're talking a lot more than we're listening to songs, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's where it started for William and I. We didn't even have an engineer in the room, I don't think, yet, when we sat down to do that. And then the first take we just did like that just felt so good that we couldn't better it. Hmm. That began the beginning of his Earthly Days record. And yeah, that's a beauty, that one. We have a very special friendship. I got a couple, I don't have a ton of friends. You know, I got a couple friends that I've known most of my life that are really special friends. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. And for later in life, William's a completely unique friendship to me. I've never had a friend in my adult life quite like it. And we're still close and in touch. And yeah, it's special. Mm-hmm. Really special. And hearing that song kind of takes me back to how I met him and how the whole thing started, and it's very charming. Like,
because that was really the record that like blew up for him, right?
Well, it was his first record. He won the Juno, and it won the Album of the Year, Roots Album of the Year, which was kind of the coveted one. And we had no budget to do it. I played most of the instruments, other than bringing in a couple people. And yeah, I mean, it's that thing, right? You don't know, nobody knows. And but there was something really special about how it began. I was at an I Don't Know More benefit thing we were all a part of, and I was standing with John Sampson, who was a new friend of mine. I was just getting to know John, and I actually just reminded William of this recently. You know, it was me that William came up to, just unusual a little bit. It was a rite of passage moment in a way. And for it to happen, as I'm standing there with John, somebody I had such reverence for, mm-hmm. somebody that I really looked up to, here comes this young guy that looks up to me. And the whole thing was sweet. And he didn't really ask me for anything other than if I would sit with him, mm-hmm. talk about songs. And he was about to be a pre-med student. Wow. He'd written and passed his MCAT and all this stuff. And
wow.
Asked me if there was a viable future in songs. And at the time, my partner, my common law partner, was in the process of writing her MCAT as well. And I came in the house and I said, you know, this young guy out back told me he wrote his MCAT and passed it on the first try. And he got like, I don't know, very high grade. And anyway, she said, you misunderstood him. I said, well, go meet him and ask him yourself. And I didn't misunderstand him at all. He's a very, very smart guy. And it's funny, I didn't give him a definitive answer. Mm. If I remember correctly, I gave him a short list of names like Sam Baker, mm-hmm. Jesse Natale, Mary Gaucher, you know, this list of people, colleagues and friends of mine. I said, go listen to these artists and come back and tell me what you think. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where it started. Hmm. I said, you know, this person paints houses and does this and is a parent. You know, this person, like, it's a real spectrum, man. It's not, you know, the dedication to the thing, right? But they're all, in my world, they're all kind of on this hierarchy for me, mm-hmm. for a bunch of reasons. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But The Carney, that was, man, what a great tune that is.
Gorgeous song. Oh, man. I want to come back to this show. You mentioned something earlier at the beginning of the interview. You started talking about doing these shows without a set list and just sort of like, you know, picking songs as you go. And I'm curious how, like, you've got quite a catalog, and like, I'm curious, like, how far back you're picking songs from and like how you keep songs with you or whether you do.
Yeah. It's like, I remember being a kid, remembering phone numbers. Back now, and it seems like you'd have to be a math genius to, you know, we don't do that anymore. Yeah. Recently, I went back to my first record and did this song called Leaving Vegas. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because it was the first song I got any attention for. And I felt very insecure and weird by it. And William and I have talked about this too. His song Breathless, mm-hmm. he'd written years before it came out. He was unsure of it. There's something about the palatability, likability, I don't know what it is. And so when I wrote the song Leaving Vegas, it was a similar thing where I'm like, I just don't know. And everybody from industry people to songwriter colleagues were like, whoa, holy shit. And I don't know what it was. It made me strangely resistant. Mm-hmm. And then I almost did, I don't know if I played the song for a decade. And when I played it again, I realized I was a young guy writing about the old me. The older me going back and singing that song now not only makes sense, it's actually what happened.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
It's really weird. It freaked me out, and I wish I could just easily take credit for it. It's if I knew where it came from, I'd be going there every day. That's for sure. So, but it's neat. So yeah, I go back as far as that.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask. Was that one of those songs that sort of comes out fully formed and kind of like one go?
I don't remember. I think it came up pretty fast.
Yeah, because you're not the first person to mention, you know, songs sort of being sort of prophesizing or sort of not really realizing what it's about until much later, and then being like, oh man, like that kind of foreshadowed a significant part of my life or whatever. But it's always the songs that come out quick.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It really reads like a glance at my career in a lot of ways, which is, yeah, it's just, but again, I, you know, I'm also kind of like, I'm always striving towards something. And so that's why I probably force that on my audiences a lot. I had somebody recently write me to say that my stories were pretty long and that my show would probably be better without the stories. And the next night I had somebody write me the opposite thing. And it's like, I thought about David Chappelle, the comedian, once said, I'm like Evel Knievel. I get paid for the attempt. And I really love that because I don't want to be an entertainer in that capacity. Mm-hmm. I want to share something with you that is sacred to me. Mm-hmm. And I have to figure out a way to do that because I didn't grow up in church. I didn't graduate high school. I don't have any of the technical stuff to support it. Mm-hmm. But it's what I'm here to do. And it comes with a high intention. And it's not going to be for everybody. And I'm pretty okay with that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's as good a time as ever. I was going to request, we're not going to have time to play all the songs on this list, unfortunately, but I was going to request we listen to a John Moreland song.
Oh, great.
I adore him, and I think this song is...
Is it the one that I mentioned?
Yeah, the one you got on here.
Well, then I'd love to tell a quick story
before.
So way back, John wrote me years ago, a private message on, I don't know what it was, Facebook probably, and he said, I heard Hayes Carl do your song, Bad Liver, and I like that lyric... nobody speaks about the truth anymore. Maybe that's what songs are for. And I wrote this song as a response.
Wow. Yeah.
And I don't know how long it took me to hit play. I wasn't avoiding it, but yeah, I feel like a year or two went by maybe before I got a chance to hit play on it. And I remember hitting play, and I'll never forget fucking hitting play on that song. Nothing prepared me for what I was about to see. Yeah. It really, really, really blew me away. And then I was traveling with Hayes Carl, and it was South by Southwest. And Hayes, his people had the second floor above the Continental Club, a very famous club in Austin, Texas. They had rented out the top floor, which is kind of a lounge, and it's got a vibey thing. And so Hayes was doing this thing all weekend at South by his songwriter friends. And it was an unbelievable kind of curation of the best of the very best. Mm-hmm. Not only did Hayes give me a slot, I played with Hayes for his. And he said, fill a slot, anybody you like. And oh my God, I had Sam Baker in my mind. I had Mark Youngers. I had Adam Carroll. I could have went any number of directions. And I thought of that guy that sent me that message. And I opened it up. I said, hey, you're not in Austin, are you? And he was. And that was a crazy legendary moment.
I bet.
Yeah, and it was just, I won't go into all the details of it, but I will say this. A few seconds into his first song, the owner of the club came and sat next to me and said, Scott, who is this?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, you're right. But this is a Townes Van Zandt moment.
Yeah.
And I remember some heavyweights in that room. People were riveted. In fact, maybe afraid. John is such a, I don't know him well. He's such a gentle and like, I don't know. He's a very, very unique guy. And I think his songs show that.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I could talk about John Moreland for a whole other hour, but let's just, we'll let him.
We'll have to do a part two, I guess.
Sounds good. We'll let him speak for himself.
Tennessee, or lock myself in Tulsa and throw away the key. One for the money, four on the floor. You were born last week with your foot at the door. I heard truth is what songs are for. Nobody gives a damn about songs. Songs are for. Nobody gives a damn about songs anymore. One for the money, four on the floor. You were born last week with a foot in the door. I heard that's what songs are for. Nobody gives a damn about songs.
Nobody Gives a Damn About Songs Anymore by John Moreland from Tulsa, Oklahoma. You're listening to Let's Play DJ, the last couple minutes of Let's Play DJ on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. My name is Jacob Berdowski, and I'm here with Scott Nolan. Scott, thank you so much for doing the show. This has been such a pleasure.
Oh, my pleasure. Oh, man, hearing that. I haven't heard that in so long. He's a special guy.
So good.
His lovely wife, Pearl's a very good friend, too. They're he's really something, John. Holy smokes.
When I used to play like brewery, like wallpaper gigs where no one listened, I would always close with that song when no one was listening.
Just I don't think I've ever told that story either, really. I mean, I've told it to friends and stuff, but I don't think I've ever really told it publicly. And
yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, well, we could do a part two. I mean, my mom calls me a jabberjaw. I'm a big talker, so that can be a problem sometimes for the radio stuff. But so if you need to edit me down or I'm happy to do either one of those.
I'd love that. Let's definitely do a part two. We'll close with one of your songs. What song? What song do you want of yours? Should we play?
Oh, geez. Let's see. What do you have in front of you? Do you have anything in front of you? Or
I got access to the internet, so whatever.
I see. Okay.
I'll put it in after. I won't make you listen to it.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. I'd go with Cabbage Town probably. I wrote it for my father, and I got to record it with these great Irish musicians, and that's a special one for me.
Cool. Scott, thank you again so much for taking the time.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Ramblers Choir is playing November 20th at the Park Theater. You can grab tickets on the internet, I assume, at the Park Theater website.
The internet, the door, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Let's Play DJ airs every Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. We're on Instagram at Let's Play DJ Radio. I'm on Instagram at Jacob Berdowski. Scott, do you have internet things you'd like to plug?
I'm on all the usual stuff, and I'm easy to find, I think.
Right on. Here's Cabbage Town by Scott Nolan. Have a great weekend, folks.
Planting cabbage, digging up the front lawn, south of Gerrard Street and west of the Dawn, absorbed by the city along the Dawn River Trail, Winchester Street to the village of Dawnvale. A working class neighborhood before the Great War. There's nobody left to be working for. George Fox ran the tavern till they tore it down. That was the day I left Cabbage Town. Invisible city towers in the park, not even the cops around after dark.